I think it's really that moment when you realize I just can't breathe anymore. And I just feel physically heavy. I can't do anything. There's no joy in my life. I'm always waiting for that other shoe to fall. I'm walking on eggshells. I don't know what to say, what not to say, when to say it, when not to say it. You just feel very, very confused, very off kilter.
Join me weekly as we unlock strategies to elevate every aspect of your life through the power of mindset. If you enjoy the show, subscribe so that you never miss an episode.
As Brené Brown once said, vulnerability is not winning or losing. It's having the courage to show up and be seen when we have no control over the outcome. Today, I am happy to welcome Kim Nave to Mindset Reinvented. Kim is a therapist, she's a life coach, and she's a dedicated advocate for parents that are navigating the complexities of raising children with intense emotions. With an MA in professional counseling, certifications in trauma therapy and life coaching, Kim brings a wealth of knowledge and personal experience to her work. Her journey from a struggling parent to a beacon of hope for families is truly inspiring. Kim, I am thrilled that you're here. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm very excited to be here.
Pleasure is mine. Kim, you talk about a powerful shift in perspective when dealing with your own trauma. Can you walk us through a little bit of that and also having that light bulb moment? How did it change your approach to life and parenting?
So it's kind of interesting being a therapist. I still perceived my life growing up as just being dysfunctional. And in pursuing life coaching to be working with people who'd experienced trauma, I came face to face with what really was trauma and not just dysfunction. And in my own healing journey, I went from a place of not having any confidence, not showing up for myself. I love that quote by Brené Brown. That is so true. So I went from this place of not having any confidence to being able to show up for myself and to understand myself better and to love me first. Because operating from a place where you're just trying to earn love from other people all the time that you can't give yourself just is a dead end road.
Yeah. I always say that we have to live a life of feeling joy inside of our hearts.
Yeah.
Because then we're not affected by anything that's outside of us. And I think that in this very visual society that we live in, a lot of people are feeling good when something outside of them makes them feel that way. And that's, like you said, it's a very dangerous place to be.
Right. Right.
Now, let's talk a little bit about parents and how they might be able to identify when they're stuck in a cycle of trying to control these external circumstances rather than focusing on inner peace.
It's a very reactive state. We feel very, obviously, very attached to our children because they're our children. And in that space, we are so attached to them that we tend to feel like we have to fix them. And that's controlling that external condition, if you will. And when we're in that space, we are reacting to everything. We're not being true to ourselves. We may or may not even know how to be true to ourselves in that moment. And we, rather than interact, I want to use the word co-act because we are co-acting with our children. So they're influencing us and we're influencing them back. And it just becomes this horrible cycle that just continues to go downhill because we're looking externally, even for, for affirmation that we're doing a good job. And when those things aren't happening, especially with kids with intense emotions, that's very few and far between when you have those cuddly moments because they're so controlled by their own emotions. And when that's what is giving us the information that we're doing well or we're not doing well as a parent, we just never feel like we have our feet under us.
How does one recognize that they're in this pattern, this endless loop? And not necessarily have to figure it out at that moment in time. But I think acknowledgement is so critically important, because then that starts the growth, that starts the journey of healing and reprogramming ourselves. But how does one recognize that they're in this pattern, this endless loop of that kind of thought?
I can go from my perspective, because I see myself as being very empathic, very intuitive, and also have a very long history of codependency. So I think it's really that moment when you realize I just can't breathe anymore, and I just feel physically heavy. I can't do anything. There's no joy in my life. I'm always waiting for that other shoe to fall. I'm walking on eggshells. I don't know what to say, what not to say, when to say it, when not to say it. You just feel very, very confused, very off kilter.
So it's really a physical feeling.
Absolutely.
That you have, and it's overwhelming.
Very, very much so. Many nights of crying yourself to sleep and just wondering where you went wrong and why God is punishing you. All of these thoughts just race through your mind.
Yeah, and if you're the type of person where you're expressive and you're able to express your emotions, and a lot of women can do that pretty easily. A lot of us men, we're bottled up. We're, you know, not experiencing that. Maybe it looks differently to us men. Maybe it's rage and anger.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's the striking back, and maybe a sense of, I'll say, unintentional vindictiveness, that I have to reassert my authority because my authority is being threatened. Whereas women, we feel like our whole self is being threatened. Maybe a man, and maybe you have perspective on this, feels more like this is my authority. I'm the man of the house. I'm the dad. I'm supposed to be in charge.
Yeah. I mean, it's ingrained in us. We're hunters and gatherers. We're the providers, you know, and anything that's less than that feels somewhat vulnerable, makes us feel weak in our essence of being a man. And I think there's this constant push and pull relationship, that gravity pull between both sides of it. Us men want to be more sensitive. We want to have some depth to our feelings, be able to express them. But then at times, you know, that intuitive hardwiring kicks in and says, no, you can't be that way. We've got to be the strong person in this.
Yeah. Well, and the protector too, you know, the rescuer, the protector, the one that solves the problems. And, I see that in my own husband as well. When he is in that position of, specifically, this has to do with one of my children right now. I have 8 total. But this one is the second from last. The first one also had these issues, but I was married to her father at the time. And even he just, you know, could have those moments when there was that softness about them, that they just, the girls were hurting, that there was this sense of, I can rescue, I can hold, I can protect. But in those moments where the emotions were just all over the place and the screaming was happening and the verbal assaults were happening, then it was like that, we were just talking about bears, that bear rising up within going, no, that's not going to go this way.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. By the way, I'm amazed. You have 8 children?
I do. From 32 to 13.
You have a little village of a family, don't you?
A baseball team, just about.
Well, that speaks volumes to who you are as a person, to be the matriarch in that hierarchy, and being able to manage, you know, so many different sets of emotions and different needs and different things. So that's phenomenal and really blows my mind, actually, to be frank with you. What's interesting is that the personal development market is seeing a surge in demand for mindfulness and stress management programs. Mm-hmm. So how do you incorporate these elements into your work when dealing with parents?
So the mindfulness aspect has to start from within. We have to be able to be mindfulness with our own self before we can act mindfully with others. And as far as the stress management, I mean, they really connect with each other. When we can get to that place where we are being mindful, where we can step out of a situation and be an observer, even in the midst of it. I actually had this experience over the weekend. My 16-year-old was not having a good day at all. And I could feel everything, all of that stress rising up in me and the desire to react and to strike back at the things that she was saying to me. And this has taken me a long time to be able to do. And I'm so grateful for the tools that I've learned to be able to do it. But just even in the midst of that conversation, to close my eyes and see myself kind of standing on a rock, observing the situation, so that I could respond to her instead of reacting to her. And sometimes that meant saying nothing. Sometimes it meant letting the accusations and the insults just roll off my back and not respond at all.
It's having that emotional intelligence and to know that, yeah, it's important to be really present in that moment and not have just a knee-jerk reaction, you know, yeah. A reflex kind of thing. Easier said than done when we're caught in our own thoughts. And I would ask for you in recommending some simple mindfulness techniques that maybe someone can try at home to be able to manage their stress levels. What would you say to that?
My favorite, my all-time favorite is deep breathing. It sounds like a cliche because everybody says, just breathe. The important part of it is using your diaphragm, because I am such a nerd, but when you use your diaphragm, it sends a message directly to your brain that says you're safe, you can relax. So that is my all-time favorite as far as being mindful. And also doing a body scan to notice what feels tense in my body and to maybe even tense it even more so that I can relax it and I can feel that difference. And then meditation. And the value in the meditation isn't just quieting the mind, but also combining that with visualization. So I can see myself in these situations and I can recognize how I behaved, how I felt, how I thought in those situations. And then also visualize, ideally, this is what it could look like. And when we visualize, our unconscious mind does not know the difference between real and imagined. So that kind of gives us I had the word and it left, but it gives us a concrete picture and a knowing that we have experienced that in our body, even though it was just imagination, that when we're in that situation, it's something we can draw on.
Well, I think that's the key, because if you're looking to create some peace and safety within the family unit, strategies that parents can use to foster an environment of peace, especially when you're dealing with intense emotions, whether it's a teenager, whether it's your spouse or whomever it might be. I think if we develop the mindfulness part of who we are through meditation, being able to control our thoughts as soon as we start seeing or feeling the emotions start coming up, and being able to flip the switch and recognize that this is not the time for that.
Yes.
That becomes a skill.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it gets easier with practice. We've had a few months now of the situation with my 16-year-old, and it's definitely something that I've had to be intentional about practicing, even when I wasn't in situations with her, because I had to have that experience in my body to know that I could do this. And one of the things I think that has been really important for me, and this is literally an insight I had like a couple of weeks ago, there's kind of a progression, if you will. So we have these beliefs about ourselves that influences our thoughts, which influences our feelings, and that causes chemicals to be released in our body, which causes us to act. And so if we're recognizing this is a situation, this is how I acted, what was I feeling? And we can identify what those feelings are. And then we can say, okay, so what are the thoughts that inspired those feelings? Then I can kind of go back that step to notice what I was thinking and what about those thoughts needs to shift so that it can be more healthy and I can respond instead of react. But also those thoughts go back to beliefs about myself. So I want to trace it back to that step and find a way to find some tools to rewire our brains in those things that we believe so that we can have healthier beliefs over ourselves. So when my daughter screams at me that I'm a crappy mom, that's not a belief I hold. And I don't have to react to that because there's nothing to defend. I know in my heart that I am a good mom. Have I made mistakes? Absolutely, we all do. But my belief about myself overall is that I am a good mom. And so when I can start there, then that influences my thoughts, my feelings, and my actions.
Does the anxiousness come from a place of, if you know that you know who you are and you know that that's not a belief that you hold, then what about just the anxiousness that starts to rise in somebody when they see their loved one, their child, also feeling anxious? So it's just the energy versus the belief.
Yes. So there's a couple of things with that. The first thing is when we feel that, I'm going to say connected. We need to be connected to our kids for sure. But we have cords that connect us that we begin to feel their emotions, and we begin to think their thoughts, and we begin to mirror their behaviors, and even energetic things of theirs can affect us. And so cutting those cords, it's not cutting the tie, it's not ending the relationship, but we're cutting that connection so that I'm not mirroring you anymore. I can be fully me. I think that's a huge piece. And then the other one is to acknowledge, I feel this anxiety. What am I feeling this anxiety? What's causing it? And what's its purpose? Because our emotions have a purpose, and that's why they're there. And when we acknowledge the emotion and we ask for the purpose, the emotion will resolve. It just wants our attention. And as our anxiety resolves, so when we're connected to our kids and they're feeling anxious, so we're feeling anxious, so they're feeling more anxious and we're feeling more anxious, and we just have this cycle going on. And when we can cut those cords and we can allow that anxiety to resolve, they also feel that. Now, they don't always react to that in that moment, and sometimes it actually increases their anxiety because, wait a minute, now mom's not reacting. Now she's responding, and I don't want that. I want the argument. And that's a whole nother ball of wax.
Yeah.
But being able to release that, just release, cut those cords and release that anxiety ourselves. Because when we can operate out of our own peace and our own sense of safety, then over time that begins to influence our children.
And if you're Caesar Milan, it also influences your pets.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. My dog was off the chart that day.
Yeah, and they're relying solely on their senses. So if they're feeling that their pack leader is coming apart at the seams, then it becomes a free-for-all. This whole concept of what you're talking about, would you say this kind of encapsulates the concept of emotional intelligence?
I think it does. I think the awareness of the emotion and reducing the fear of having an emotion, I think that helps to increase our emotional intelligence and our ability to, respond rather than react.
Yeah. And I personally think, now I don't have children. I've got lots of nieces and nephews. And I come in on the white horse and then I go home for the day. But
lucky
me, I know. But it's interesting because children don't really have a great chance at learning this emotional intelligence unless it starts from the people that are closest to them that they love and respect the most, of which are parents. And so I think just for that reason alone, even if we're in a position where we're like, you know what, I have no interest in working on myself. Do it for your children.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Absolutely.
The biggest gift you can give them, right?
100%. I had talked about doing my own trauma work and healing from my own trauma. And this was before things with my daughter began to escalate, but I noticed a difference in my relationships with all of my kids. They started talking to me and telling me things, some things I just didn't want to hear, but that's all right. But they felt comfortable and safe sharing with me that they hadn't felt before, because I was that angry parent. I was the one that could stub my toe on the bed and cuss the bed, scream at the kids, and kick the dog. I really didn't kick the dog. It just makes a cool little progression there. But I was that person. And so they couldn't trust me to talk to me about things. And so healing gave me that ability to process that anger and to heal from the wounds that had caused that anger in the first place.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the biggest benefit is just having this degree of trust between you and your child, mm-hmm. and them being so open to having dialogue with you. That would be the biggest victory
that one
could have. Do you have any other examples of maybe how some of your clients may have improved the dynamics of their families through having emotional intelligence, starting with the parents?
It sort of does affect the child as well, but I did have a client who was really struggling in his relationship with his wife. He was lying about things he didn't really need to lie about. He was not open. He was very defensive when his wife would bring something up. And so we used a meditation tool and worked through something that had happened in his childhood that had affected him greatly that he hadn't realized. And through clearing that influence and working through that process, his relationship with his wife began to change. And his relationship with his stepdaughter began to change as well. And they were able to communicate better. And so rather than reacting to her the child's high emotions, he could say, you know, I hear that you're angry and I understand. And this is just not something that I'm willing to contribute to. So I'm going to let you sit by yourself and let you calm down a little bit, and then let's talk about it. And over time, she began to do that. And she was like 8 or 9 at the time. So she was a younger child and still able to begin to kind of look at her emotions, because that's what her stepdad was doing.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And I remember a long time ago witnessing a parent calm his son down in a way that was really eye-opening to me, because his son was going through this episodic fit, and he was in this moment of rage and just kind of aggression and just very angry and bitter. And what his father did was he reached over to him and put him on the ground, and he hovered over him to prevent him from moving in the way that he was, in the way that he wanted to. But he was telling him that he loved him, that it was okay. And all he kept telling him was, I love you, it's okay. And he was trying to get out of it. He was not having any of it until he surrendered.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was out of safety for him. It was out of love. He knew.
Yes.
That he was, you know, in the right place and in his father's arms.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's a big key, because again, we get into that reactive state where we're just trying to defend, trying to protect ourselves. And when we can have that internal safety and that internal peace already, it is much, much easier to hold our child in that moment, whether it's physically or just emotionally. We can hold space for that child because we have that peace within ourselves, rather than trying to protect ourselves. And I think the other thing that is huge is validation, which I'm a little bit embarrassed to say that it took me a hot minute to figure out. But validation isn't saying what you're saying is true. It's just saying it's true for you, and I hear that you're saying that. And that can be hard for parents when a kid is screaming at you that they hate you. Who wants to go, I hear you, and it's okay to feel that way, because that's your emotion right now? Correcting them in that moment, they're not hearing anything. We can't learn when our emotions are that high. Literally, when our emotions get high, it shuts down the thinking part of our brain. So we're not thinking anymore.
That's powerful. That is powerful. It's really, you do need to rise up in order for you to take yourself out of that heated moment and not take it personally, and recognize that it's just an emotional charge that they're having. And it's recognizing that, you know, that they're having it and not minimizing it. Mm-hmm. I think that's really important. Just shifting gear. I'm enjoying this conversation with you on many levels. You integrate faith into your coaching approach. So yeah. How do you balance spiritual guidance with evidence-based techniques in your work?
Oh, what a question. I'm not even sure I have words for it. I mean, it's very, for me, it's very intuitive. When I'm working on myself, when I'm using my own tools with situations within myself, it's a constant connection with God and a communication with God, and inviting Him into the midst of that meditation. Because He is my safe place. And there are things that I have experienced that to think about, I don't feel safe in and of myself, but to know that His presence is with me in that moment is the thing that helps me to be able to have that safety to process that moment. With clients, I'm very client-led. I have clients that want nothing to do with God, and I have clients that are very faith-based. And so, I follow their lead on that. And it is about inviting God into everything that we do for me. And that's what I encourage my clients to do because, you know, if they're a faith-based client, that is their foundation. And like you said, I mean, there's that balance between spirituality and evidence-based. To be honest, so I am working on my doctorate degree with Liberty University, which is a faith-based university, and looking at evidence through a faith-based lens is just a whole nother level of awe, because so many of these principles that are being proven by science are really biblical principles to begin with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All roads lead back, right back, don't they?
Yeah. It's just a matter of admitting it.
Yeah. Interesting. Very interesting. So if you had to sum up for a parent that's struggling right now with their own emotions, with their own desires for wanting to be better in their own lives as a wife or as a husband, just as a parent, maybe as a sibling, an aunt, an uncle, what would you say to them if they only had an opportunity to hold on to what you're going to say in this, without putting any pressure on you, of course, but in this little segment, what would you say to someone that can give them some hope that they can actually improve these skills in their daily lives?
The very first thing that I would say is, and there are exceptions to this, but overall, it is not your fault. You didn't do something horribly wrong. There's actually research that says we just have to do it right 30% of the time. 30%. I can do 30%, right? So it's not your fault. You need tools, because you have to heal yourself first, because before you can truly hold space and support your child. Otherwise, both of you are going under. They're looking to you for that guidance, and you have to get you in a place where you can hold that space. You have to create that peace and safety for yourself first.
I want to underscore what you just said, which is, it is not your fault.
Absolutely.
It's also not your parents' fault.
Yes. And
caveat,
yes. Our parents are not responsible for our behavior. We are not responsible for what our parents did for us or to us, but we are responsible to heal the wounds that were caused, whether they were intentional or unintentional. We have to heal those wounds. That part is our responsibility, because there's nothing they can do to fix it.
Amen. Amen. And they worked with the tools that were available to them back then.
Exactly.
They did the very best job that they can. There's no point in being resentful towards parents or anybody else for that matter.
Yeah.
We at some point we just have to say, okay, it's time to take some responsibility for ourselves.
Yes. And that's back to Brené Brown and being vulnerable.
Exactly. Exactly. The other thing that I'd like you to touch upon, if you wouldn't mind, is community, because community support plays a crucial role in personal growth. So how do you foster a sense of community among the parents that you work with, especially in online settings?
I offer a Facebook group for parents that can be a part of that group for that support. I think there is some value in venting when you're venting for the purpose of, I got to get this out and I need help fixing it. Just venting for the sake of, I just want to scream, isn't quite as productive. But there is a, and I don't know the name of it off the top of my head, that's awful. But there, I do have a group on Facebook that I will have to get back to you on.
Yeah. Well, what we're going to do is, of course, we're going to put in the show notes how our friends of the show can reach you, okay, your website, your social media. So if you want to drop that in, you could send it
absolutely
to me. We have a little bit of time before we go to production on the show anyway.
Okay.
And I think the community is really important because it does help parents stay consistent with all of these practices. And I'm a big believer that rising tides carry all ships.
Yeah.
And we don't need to be on an island all on our own, you know. I think that's where we get into trouble sometimes. Did you want to say something?
Yeah, I was just going to say that it's not just about what the support that you, maybe you could try this or whatever, but knowing that you're not alone, because there are so many of us. I mean, go to Walmart. How many kids do you see screaming through Walmart? And those parents are experiencing this. So knowing that you're not alone, knowing that you know, you didn't do something wrong, and that you can fix, I hate to use that word, but you can transform your own life that will enable you to help and support your children better. And just being in a community of people that are working on that at the same time. And it's also a place where we can call each other out, you know, have you considered this? So,
yeah, that's great. That's great insight. And the last comment I'll make is that when we're in Walmart, and we're looking around, and if we do see a well-mannered child, I think that's terrific. But keep in mind that it might just be that snapshot in time.
Oh, definitely.
And there could be a breakout as soon as they get down the candy aisle. You know, you just never know.
Yes, 100%. 100%.
So we need to put things into perspective. Kim Nave, it's a pleasure to have you on the show. We're out of time. I'd love to talk with you more, and maybe we can invite you back another time.
Sure,
or we can dive into some
wonderful
other topics. Yeah, and I just want to thank you for your time and sharing your insights, your experiences with us today. Your journey from your personal struggles to helping countless families is a special gift that you have. And it shows your intention and the size of your heart. And I'm sure that listeners that are either watching us on YouTube or listening over their favorite podcast app have gained some valuable tools to help them navigate some of the complexities of parenting and also improving personal growth. And if you want some more, you'll just go to the show notes and you'll be able to find Kim directly. And by the way, you can find her at, and I'll have this in the show notes as well, but you can find her at healing-waters-counseling.com. You can also find her on Facebook at Kim Nave Life Coach. And so we'll have all this in the show notes. So again, thank you all for tuning in to Mindset Reinvented. If you found value in today's episode, as I always ask, please, please, please share it with someone who might benefit from hearing Kim's wisdom, whether you know it or not. It's hard to judge what people need in their lives. Just pass it forward, because a little bridge that you create can make all the difference in the world to somebody. So stay updated. Make sure that you're in our email list. Visit mindsetreinvented.com, and we will keep you in the loop as we have new episodes and some of the behind-the-scenes content that we will be soon releasing. And until next time, keep nurturing your growth, your mindset, and keep reinventing your approach to life's challenges. So take care, everybody. And thank you again, Kim, for being here.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. Bye for now.